Mr. Chadwick, Reel 10, how did, after you were talking about your time with 16th Battalion, and you just moved to Patras, and then shortly after Elas, there was a peace signed with, or the truce. How did that affect your life in Patras?
I can't remember exactly, but we weren't there very long. We moved back to Athens. Had a respite then, sunbathing for a week or two, sports days, and generally having a good time, actually.
What about the sports days? Did you take part?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
What did you enter for?
Well, there was no boxing and no swimming then. So I used to run the mile. I used to have a go at anything. I was no good, but I used to. And I think I was keener. A lot of them must have been better than me, but they didn't want to be bothered, so they let an enthusiastic youngster like me win, start of it. But I was never brilliant as a young. But anything that was going on, I had a go at. But these were only battalion sports days. Just from themselves.
Well, you had a good time. Would you visit the local tavern or sort of thing? Were you drinking a bit more by then?
Oh, certainly.
When had you started drinking more? Would that be in Italy or when you got to Greece? Because before you said you hadn't
more
drunk.
So in more so in Greece, really started it. Of course, that's where everybody headed for every night. You do a bit of sightseeing and then finish up in one of the cafes. And you were going to bed at night, just for the beauty. I mean, you weren't going into a bed, but you were going to sleep at night, which was a luxury. Because then you used to get all that much sleep.
And what did you drink?
The proper word is Retsina, Crassi, the local drink or usual.
That's very strong.
Very strong. Too strong.
Did you have any trouble?
Oh, there were obviously beyond bar brawls. Not amongst our own troops, among other chaps, or the odd group here and there. But not a lot. Not a lot. Nothing serious.
Did you ever get into trouble for being drunk? You know, when you got
never
back?
Not there. But later, yeah.
Being new to drink, did you find it, well, fairly new to it, did you find it a bit much at the start?
Well, more than a bit much, I found that the morning after what I call a heavy session compared to some of them, such a proverbial hangover, invariably always said, that's it, I'm leaving that alone. But by midday, and you're young and fit, you've recovered quite well, so a little encouragement from your pals, they were all going, so off you went again, as it were.
Was it pretty cheap then, because you weren't being paid much?
The local at Retsina, you know, we used to say, a shilling a firebucket full. It was that cheap. And at the drachma, I think there was about 9 million to a pound or something at the time. So it didn't, the cash side didn't come into it.
And how did you get on with the Greeks then?
Great. They were wonderful. And of course, we were, I suppose, classed as bits of heroes, and that's been wanted, cap badges for saving the living. All this kind of stuff. But that was then, you know, the euphoria was still there. At last, we got Greeks. We got rid of the Germans, we got rid of Elas, we got rid of KK. So it was starting to settle down to a normal life. And I must admit, they were starving when we went, the Greeks. They were literally starving. A bar of chocolate would work wonders, a pack of biscuits.
Anything else about your time in Greece when you were back in Athens?
Well, I'm going to say I think I enjoyed it immensely. We had no real regimental duties, but we were established. We were living in houses and burned out hotels, living anywhere. So you couldn't, we got together, there was no regimental duties as such. You did your own cricket on your own areas.
What about training? Because the history rattles on quite a bit about training. Towards just in March mainly. Do you remember much training? Route marches and shoots, things like that.
We had the route march, which was the route march as such. We had director, as well as I can remember, we'd get up in the morning and we'd have a few lectures, which amounted to not a great deal, and the afternoon on was warm. It was more of a respite. Rest. He did very little training.
What about company camps? They went to 4-day company camps. Do you remember them? So the impression in the history is not as you really remember it. You don't remember it as a period of intense training towards the end.
I don't know what you were being there, but I can't remember.
You were a corporal by now. What difference did that make? What responsibilities would you say you had as Lance Corporal and Corporal?
Increased, no. Not really. Other than if you went on guard duty, you went to bed. You didn't do a sentry. They did the sentries and you were the guard commander. Other than that, no difference, because, as I said before, wartime, you're not in depot. It's not yes corporal and no corporal. It were if anybody was about salivating, but it was telling me there was your and that, unless occasionally it was.
Did you have any trouble with the men perhaps older than yourself when you were
not
a young?
Not at all. Remarkable that people asked that. Not at all. And I think if they saw that, well, I hope I'm in the job. But if you didn't, if you were trying, I've always found if you tried to do your best, it was acceptable. But no problems at all with that. But of course, all they, 90% of them were just waiting to get out.
Were you keen to get on further still?
Then, when I realised I was certainly going to make it my career, I didn't go mad at getting on, but I intended getting on.
When did you decide to make it your career?
Right at the start, right from training. But of course, you had to do what you were called up for before you could sign up. Everybody's went in was HO only. And then when your group number, age and service group, you know how that works, how old you were, how long you'd been, you got a number. And then before that came up to be, you went up and signed on, which was in Salonika, where I signed up.
Right, we'll come back to that, yeah. So, you left Greece, I think, on the 13th of April, going back to Italy.
The day President Roosevelt died.
Did that make an impact on you at the time?
Not Roosevelt. No, nothing did. I think, if I remember rightly, Peter, we sailed on the Villa di Orlando. A French ship, because it was all flooded, and they were trying to explain to us what do we call it, Roosevelt Caput, and they couldn't make out what they were on about anyway. They weren't got around, but Roosevelt had died. So I didn't know the day.
Well, how did what was the overall mood about the possibility of going back into action in Italy? Because that's where you were going to, I presume.
Yeah. A lot of them were keen, which is understandable, because it was found their cause, it was a bit late to get a woman to have thought. We'd gone so long that another spell in the line wouldn't have been very nice.
Were they aware that the war was nearly over?
Yeah. I'll answer that question better a little later on.
Okay. Anything about the voyage? You went to Taranto.
Yeah, it was lovely. And then Mediterranean cruise. Just sat there and sunbathed and had a lovely trip across. Yes, it was the Villa de Yolande, a French trip. Lovely trip. Great. And then back to Toronto.
And what happened there?
Just went into concentration area, bivouac area. I think it was only a week. And then this ill-fated trip on the OCIs from Toronto to Vancouver, which was a quicker way because the trains, they stopped at every chip shop with the trains. And by road, it was a problem. But whipping us up there, up to Vancouver, once we disembarked there, we were ready for it.
Now, you haven't told me on the tape, what was the voyage up like on the LCIs?
Horrific. It's the roughest, God, I don't know, talk about 48 hours or something. It was that bad, we laid off a lot of hours for everybody to get down poles. It was so bad, it was really, really rough. We couldn't stand up. We were lying on the floor. The buckets where the ships had been sitting were flying across the floor. Honestly, God, it was like a fairground ship. It was the roughest trip I've ever had in my life.
Were people nervous?
Oh, a lot were. Fortunately, I wasn't sick. But I'd say about most were. And some just laid there and never even moved. It was that bad.
And you say you recognised the driver. Could you tell us that driver, the captain?
Oh, no, it was a naval seaman. I was looking through the window on it. They had a little small bridge on, like a fishing smack. And I looked, I was trying to think of his name. I was trying to think of him. And I looked at him, you know. And yeah, I know he had a lovely setup. He had a load of local papers with him from Accrington, which he gave to me. Because we had a few drinks on there with his mess deck crews and that. But it's a nice thing to meet him. I met him years later in Accrington. But I can't remember his name.
And so eventually you landed at Ancona?
Yes. Landed at Ancona.
And then what?
Then moved again to concentration area, ready to go into the line. And then we moved further north to within about 4 miles of the line, I think.
So this was in the Fawley area?
Well, Fawley de Poplar. Yeah, Fawley. The Fawley area, and then we just missed going in the line by, well, if not hours, days, only 2 or 3 days, they must have said there's no future pulling more troops in, just leave the ones that were there. So we bivouacked a few miles back, and that's where we celebrated the end of the war.
Now you said people, you were going to say something more about people being nervy about going in the line later on.
No, I think about it, what I said, when did we know that peace was in the air? When we got to Old Toronto, we got out one night to the local taverna, as you call it. And the ITIs told us then that peace had been signed at Cherbinara, a place called Cherbinara. And they said, rubbish. But history proved they were right. It had been signed in advance. And, of course, come near the 8th,
Now you were at Burton Oro village in that. What do you remember of the day peace broke out, so to speak?
Well, remarkable day actually. We weren't far from Milan, so I was a left-footed Catholic, club, not practicing. So it was wonderful. See, of the East had a church parade, of course, and the Catholics, a handful of us, were given a truck and sent into Milan to go to the mass. So we did. The Paddy Gilbert, I forget the name, I read that name. And we went to this service, and when we came out, there was an Irish lady on the steps of this cathedral called us over. And we found out she was a teacher, she'd been there about 20 or 30 years or something. So she invited us back to her home and her friends to celebrate. So we thought, well, we've got nothing to lose. So we went back and we came out of there to kind of multi-stample. We couldn't stand, we were rolling. Anyway, I was a bit worried about the second market and went to the property at Battery Island, because when we got back, we were only living in a few years ago, in Bimberwags, everybody was the highest class, so there was nothing going on. But it was a memorable day, and we saw an Irish lady. When I say old, she'd be about 40 or 50, but she was old to us then. And that was big, yeah, whatever you call it.
Now, the next day, May the 9th, they had a sort of grand fete where the vehicles, you know, they decorated jeeps and various other things. Do you remember that at all?
We had little parties. I think that's I honestly can't.
Fair enough. Now, on the 11th of May, they started to move up. It, you know, do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. But the 11th of May, that was. Well,
according to the Stringer's book. Yeah.
Oh, you'd be right. Now, this was quite memorable, because we set off, really not knowing where we were going. And we set off in North Conway by vehicles. And the journey was to take us over the Maritime Alps, as they called it then. But we set off. Now, I don't know how long this journey took to Austria, because we then touched into Yugoslavia, where Tito and his forces were assembled. And I remember there was a firing squad in place with the partisans. They were shooting. I don't know who they were, but it was the first time I didn't actually witness it, but I was on the yard down the hill where this business took place. And if I remember rightly, the place was called Gutenberg in Yugoslavia. Again, I can't say how long we stayed there, not long.
How were the local population to you as you passed through, you know, Italy?
Well,
and
very interesting, you in the US. Because what we've got on television today was started when we were there, what they called the Morgan Line and the Trieste Line. And we couldn't understand them at all, because we didn't know. We thought they were speaking Italian. They weren't Italians. They were Serbs, they were Croats, they were Muslims. We didn't know them, but we couldn't understand the word. We'd all picked a smattering of the Italian language up. But we couldn't understand this lot. The best parties I had was with the partisans at night, with their guitar. They were like gypsies. And we had some wonderful groups up with them at night. And they were most emphatic from the horses. No, they were speaking English, explained to us. But while they were fighting, all these women with bandoliers on, etc., they were all taught to chastity. And if they broke the rule, they were shot. And I do believe them. He said if there was any nonsense of that nature, they were shot. If it was true or a woman complained, they were knocked off by their own forces, T-Jones men. It was very interesting, didn't it, that? But this is the end product of what happened there. They were split up, they were all mixed up. And later they had the Morgan line, they had the Trieste line. I'm sure the Trieste line will be in that book. And it's taken up all of this 40, 50 years later, and they're still not sorted out.
Now, what about when you passed into, you went into Austria? How about the Austrian civilians? How did they?
Well, the journey into Austria was most interesting. We'd do so many miles per day, and then we'd sleep on the roadside at night, under the trucks. And the most interesting part of that journey was wonderful. We saw the might of the Russian army, elite troops, moving towards Vienna. But of course, we weren't going to Vienna then. And we also saw what I've always called the ragtag and bobtail of the Russian army. There was peasants on horse-driven vehicles, drunk, falling off the vehicles, hurricane lamps on the back, cockerels crawling on the back of the trucks. Really, really lunatics. And they were all heading to Vienna, and they did have a time when they got there. So all the reports were, they just pillaged. So they took the elite troops in to do the regimental duties, and they took the peasant troops in, the guerrilla troops, as they were, and plunged and pillaged. And they certainly did. They were walking about with wristlet watches from here to here.
Well, right up their arm.
All the way up their arm. And if I may advance it slightly, one night we were at the pitches there, and the Russian troops opened up with their machine guns at the screen. Drunk. And that was the scene. But it was a really wonderful experience.
What about the Austrians? The civilians?
That was the first time in my life I'd ever heard that those famous words, mein Comrade. We saw this house, so our little section bedded down in the garden, put this bivouac down for the night, and this German come out, this oldish man, I'd say it'd be 50, 60 then. Mein Comrades, whatever you want, we help you, and of course, we were young, and we didn't take too kindly to this comrade lark, but he was obviously trying to win us over. He was frightened of him, but normally they didn't. But I might advance it a bit. When we got to Austria, the local Catholic priest came and said there was a Catholic retreat going on. Our Arsene Fardy. So I said, oh, I'm not interested. He said, look, it's clean sheets, beds, lovely food, 4 days. Walbert Slush, it was called, I forget the place. And we went there, and the nuns looked after us one of us, and we looked at them. It was probably meant to pray. But we only did the first night we were there, the Reverend Mother asked me, would we like to put a guard on the Slush as the young Nazis were stealing all the wine and the food, so we said yes. Now at this time, most of us were armed with Lugers. Anyway, nothing happened that night, but the next day, or the day after, I'm not quite sure, three of us were walking down the lane, and about 10 of these Nazis were coming up, these young fellows, 16, 17, and we were in a tight spot. Sort of thing. So by then we were picking up a snap in the German language, and I told them to get on the bikes, and they wouldn't. So I pulled this Luger out, and I said, anybody makes another step, and I'll shoot. And I did. But what I intended to do was shoot about 2 yards in front of him. Not being a good shot, I shot him straight through the foot. And that did the trick. They were awesome. It went straight through and up the sole. I didn't intend that. I meant that sort of. And after he went awesome in the bad incident. And according to the Reverend Mother, they know no trouble. So this must have been the guy that was doing the tricking. But the first place that we went to, I just can't remember the names of the.
What about the German army? Because there are apparently a lot of surrendering German troops.
And infantry did, it was called.
369?
I think it was 369. I think it was. The most vivid recollection I have of that was being misled. There was thousands of them. So what we did, we had soldiers lined up with backs. The first pack was for German belts, got mittens. The next one was for pistols. The next stack was personal weapons. So forth and so forth. And these stacks on this side was for Geld, money, Deutschmarks. Now then, word came. There was no need for anybody to attempt to steal any money. First of all, they'd be court-martialed if they were found and severely doubtful. Now, we had stacks of Deutschmarks. They said they weren't worth a dime because a new BMA currency was going to be scary. But we realized we used all that money to kindle fires. Brewing us tea and cooking chips, into our chips if we could. When we got into the heart of Austria, that money was valuable for about 4 or 5 months before the bits of it burnt thousands of pounds. Well, we literally did sackfuls of marks.
And which you got off the prisoners?
Made hand over everything by the payment.
And that's where you got the Lugers from, I presume?
Oh, no, we had everything.
Where did you get them from?
They were all taken off German soldiers. Passed around, blocked, some of that after the fall, and there was a packet of 5 and there was a little bit.
But when? Was that after the peace you got them?
Oh, no, they got a lot of them during the war. They got a lot after the peace. Practically everybody, it was getting dangerous, this gun business. Everybody was feeling that the lead really something with it.
Now, one of the places you went to was Bleiburg.
That's right. Well, I remember Bleiburg, yes.
So what were you doing there?
Nothing. The wrong boat together. It's all coming back. This was the most interesting part that we started. We started the horse patrol. There was millions of horses.
Where did they all come from?
Well, they're all German army horses because they still use horse transports to trick them on. For instance, if they were marching, they had a horse-drawn cookhouse. So the bloke was cooking money on them. It was thousands of horses. And we couldn't ride without them. None of us could ride. And the first role we had was going up around the ex-British prisoners of war. Because believe it or not, a lot of them were married and didn't want to come home.
Married Austrian girls?
And they were saying to me, look, do me a favour, pal, you haven't seen me. And in some cases, you did. You'd wake the chap up if he looked a decent part. But of course, we were looking for the SS.